This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org. And by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Getting close to 130.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. We'll begin with the price of oil. It's actually down from Friday's record highs, but still, it's at $126 a barrel. Gas prices are up 17 cents in the past 2 weeks to $3.79 a gallon. Gas prices hit $4 on average in New York and Chicago for the first time. The stock markets are eking out gains despite energy prices. Wall Street's coming off a pretty decent week. The Dow starts out at 12,986. The Dow and the S&P 500 added 2% last week. The Nasdaq was up 3% and starts the morning at 25,28. European shares are up a fraction so far. And in Asia, the markets had small gains at the end of the day. In China, the stock market had a moment of silence today for victims of last week's earthquake. The death toll could reach 50,000, the Chinese government says. Reporter Jamila Trindle joins us now from the earthquake zone. Jamila, what's happening to the people who have survived this?
Well, there are a couple official shelters that have been set up in stadiums and schools, and they're being given food, and people have set up places where they can make free phone calls. But in addition to that, just driving around, you see all these tents set up everywhere. So there's a lot of different ways that people are coping for now, but it's unclear what the next step will be for them.
And what about the aid that is coming in from the government, and I also understand from the people of China?
There's been a large outpouring of concern, of course, and aid, and volunteers have been arriving, sometimes too many and too disorganized, trying to get in to help. But there's been a lot of aid from different companies. The government, they're offering about $1.40 a day for people that have been affected and displaced by the quake. And so they're really hoping that people will cycle through these large, camps of 15 to 30,000 people.
China kind of stood still today with the moment of silence, and the stock market had a moment of silence, and a lot of things were closed. But there's going to be a process here of people getting back on their feet financially. Do we know anything about the plans for that happening?
Individuals seem to have little plan as to what to do next. I think a lot of people are waiting for some sort of safety inspection of the buildings that they would go back to. And I think it's going to take a while for people to figure out what to do next. I think a lot of people are hoping the government will come in with some sort of aid or effort to rebuild.
Jamila Trindle in China's Sichuan province, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, committed to writing about issues that matter and the connections between them. The Economist. See the world differently. At newsstands and economist.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management. Online at shrm.org.
Yahoo and Microsoft are back to flirting. They're not talking about a full-blown marriage this time, just a casual partnership in online searches and advertising. The buyout is off the table for the moment, to the dismay of many Yahoo shareholders, but not all.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Alan Sloan, you say in deals like this, shareholders usually fall into two camps. What do you mean?
Well, when some offer has surfaced, many of the big shareholders of the company, that's what we call in the trade the target, have to decide whether they want to hold the stock to see if the deal goes through or whether they want to sell it in the market and let someone else, known in the trade as a risk arbitrageur, take the risk.
But in this case, the deal fell through. So what happened?
The stock had been 19 before Microsoft appeared, so a lot of players took their 50% windfall, you know, from 19 to 28, and had given the risk to the buyers, and they really got whacked when Microsoft originally called off the deal. The price of Yahoo stock fell rather sharply. Then they complained publicly about Yahoo, which I thought was really sort of childish because they could have sold their stock.
Well, Alan, are you a patient type investor or are you an arbitrageur?
These days, I'm patient with a little soupçon of arb because, again, I happen to own Wrigley stock. And Wrigley, I've owned it for years and years and years. And as you may or may not know, Wrigley was dragging along in the 60s. And an offer came for 80 from the Mars family and Warren Buffett. And the stock shot up. You know, it's very, very high in the, right. in the high 70s. So I have a question of whether or not to sell into the market in the 70s or to wait for my 80. And I've pretty much chosen to wait for my 80 because I think it's, you know, a reasonably certain thing to happen. Now, if it turns out the deal breaks up and the stock goes back to 60, you'll hear me sobbing, but you won't hear me whining.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But when it comes to shopping on the internet, the web may be overrated. Ashley Milne-Tite has this report.
Some people can barely remember research before the internet. The Pew Internet Project looked at how people use the web to shop for music, a cell phone, and a home, and how much all that clicking affects their eventual decision. John Horrigan is an associate director with the project.
We found that on the order of 10% of people in each category said that the internet had a major impact on their final purchase decision. And that was surprising for a good like music, where there's just a wealth of music information online and the chance to sample.
Horrigan says even most respondents in the Facebook generation said they find out about music through radio or TV or offline friends. He says people still crave the human touch in the form of in-store sales advice, for example. As for feedback posted by consumers, a third of us use those comments to help us make a decision, but only about 6% of us bother to post our own critiques. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.